morning. This is Dr. John Lee sitting in for Dr. McDougall, who's off doing good someplace, I'm sure. You know that we share a great faith that the food we eat has a lot to do with how our health is. And he invites me every once in a while when he's out of town to sit in for him. I'd like to introduce myself a bit for people who may have not heard me before. My name is John Lee. I'm a retired family doctor from Mill Valley, and after 34 years, I retired in order to teach and do research and to tell people what they can do to make themselves well. I'm a 19-year resident of Sonoma County, and while I'm not a practicing physician and I'm not listed in the Yellow Pages, I am quite active in my writing and my teaching. I teach a class down at College of Marin from September through March each year, which I've been doing for over 16 years, a class called Optimal Health, trying to tell people how to be as healthy as they can be. So that I regard myself as an educator, teacher on health matters, and not your personal doctor, but I'm very happy to try to answer any questions that people might have, that if it falls in my area of some expertise, I'll give you my opinions. The phone numbers for this program, this is live radio, as you know, and the KSRO in Santa Rosa, the phone number locally is 270-1350. That's the call numbers of the station for people in outlying areas. They can call in on 1-800-570-TALK. That's 1-800-570-8255. Today, I brought some topics along that are of particular interest to me. And of course, most of you know one of my interests is female hormones, menopause, osteoporosis, and hormone balancing, and of course, natural progesterone, about which I wrote a book. The other problem that interests me at this time in particular is a political problem. And I'm not a politician, and but the problem concerns fluoridation. Whether you like it or not, all of us who live here in Sonoma County, everybody who drinks Santa Rosa water, will, if the bill passes through the Senate, will be forced to fluoridate, whether you like it or not. It's interesting. I've been following the passage of this bill in the Assembly and now in the Senate. And I have some thoughts to share with you about the political process when it comes to a health matter such as fluoridation. It's not very pleasant. In fact, it's pretty darn ugly. When you go to Sacramento and try to talk to assemblymen and senators who have no particular knowledge on the subject and are being inundated with fantastic propaganda claims from those who hope to benefit from the business of putting fluoride in your drinking water. And on my several previous occasions, I've mentioned that I've done a particular study of this starting back in 1972, and I first realized that there's too much fluoride in our food intake as is, with food being processed in fluoridated water. You're all getting fluoride from drinking Coca-Colas and other drinks. You get it from the Wheaties you eat. You're getting it from all this processed food. And even the Public Health Service admits there's far too much fluoride already in our food supply. That was my first inkling there was something wrong with the fluoridation problem. And then my research led me into measuring a fluoride toxicity, which is not routinely done by anybody. But when I did, I found that there are a number of patients in practice that are overly fluoridated. And the third thing we'll talk about today, that it doesn't really do much good for your teeth anyway. So we have some things to talk about. I'll tell you about my own experience and what is happening in Sacramento. We'll be back shortly. Good morning again. This is Dr. Lee sitting in for Dr. McDougall. It's my pleasure to be here this morning, and I'm raising the issue of fluoridation. Actually, I really want your help. In fact, all of us who have looked into the fluoride problem want your help, and the help is that is needed is that you must contact your state senator. This bill to fluoridate against your will or against the will of the people and an unfunded mandate, which is going to cost anywhere from $38 to $100 million to do this, is now approaching the state Senate. And here in Sonoma County, our senators are Milton Marks, whose address is room 5035 at the state capitol in Sacramento, 95814. And his fax, if you're interested, is 916-327-7229. Mike Thompson from St. Alida is our other state senator from our district, and his office is in room 3056, Sacramento, 95814. And his fax number is 576-2773. The reason I'm giving you these addresses and fax numbers is that they desperately need your input on your desire regarding fluoridation. The bill that is passing through, which did pass the Assembly and is now approaching the Senate, is a bill introduced by Jackie Speer, an Assemblywoman from Southern California, based entirely on her understanding, which happens to be a false illusion, that fluoridation will reduce the amount of money that the state spends on treating kids' teeth and kids who happen to be on welfare or Medi-Cal or some program such as that. She has become convinced that if we fluoridated the water, the state bill, the state costs for dental care would go down. And for that, she is asking that the state mandate fluoridation. They will not allow you to vote on it. They are going to do it to your water, and they don't know where the money is going to come from to do this. I've attended several of the Assembly meetings, and the story keeps changing. First, they say the state will do it. Then the state informs her that, no, the state is already broke, and they don't have an extra $100 million lying around to do that. And then she said, well, then the water districts will do it. And the water district, the people said, no, they won't do that. They don't derive any benefit from this. They will have to get the money elsewhere. Then she said, well, then we'll change the bill so that the water districts will be allowed to raise your water tax to pay for it, whether you like it or not. And that, of course, didn't fly. So now they say they're going to seek out private contributions to come up with $100 million to do this. Fat chance. If there were any contributions for this, they'd probably come from the industry that is really benefiting. Let me tell you where fluoride comes from. Fluoride is a toxic waste product that is produced by the fertilizer industry, the aluminum industry, and any major industry that burns an awful lot of coal and fossil fuel. Fluoride is a halogen in the same line as chlorine, bromine, iodine, which happens to be the 13th most common element in the Earth's crust. The 13th may sound high to you, but it's actually a very tiny amount is in the Earth's crust, where it's bound to calcium and magnesium. Fluoride binds to calcium, magnesium, and as such, if we did get some of that dirt on our vegetables or it was in the water, it would pass through us without harming us. The fact is, the companies that make fertilizer, for instance, they dig up the limestone, such as in Florida, in order to get phosphate. As you know, the fertilizer is NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So they dig up the limestone, they extract the phosphorus, and they're left over with the ashes and debris, which contain the fluoride. Because fluoride is a Class A poison in the same category is arsenic, much more toxic than lead, the EPA has insisted that they put collectors on the top of the smokestacks that grind up and heat up the rock in order to get the phosphate. Because if the fluoride escapes up the smokestacks and falls onto forests, it kills trees for 50 miles downwind. If it falls on pasture land, it inhibits milk production and causes cattle to become small and unhealthy. In fact, will die from it. They can't, their neck gets so stiff they can't bend down to feed, and their teeth and mouth get so sore they can't drink any cold water because of the pain. So many lawsuits have occurred because of this, and the major polluting industries have to pay off all these farmers for their cows that are lost. And the EPA also prevents them from letting the fluoride sit around on the ground in slag heaps, because if it gets into the water supply, it kills fish and plants in all streams and lakes downstream or downriver, and they can't bury it in the ground like they might something else, like they're trying to do with the radioactive waste. The EPA has all these strict limits, but the EPA does not monitor or control the amount that goes into your public water. Years ago, that particular agency, that particular authorization, regulation was given to the Public Health Service, and lo and behold, they concocted the story that fluoride was good for people's teeth, and therefore they have a right to dribble it away in your water supply, and they do that at a monstrous rate of many hundreds of tons per day. A typical fertilizer plant down in Florida will produce 600 tons of fluoride per day. And this has to be disposed of somehow. It doesn't burn. It's an element. It can't be caused to just disappear. It has to be dumped someplace. So they found it very useful to dump it in small but continuous amounts in the water supply. Within the water supply, less than 0.1% of the water so fluoridated is actually drunk by children who are supposed to benefit from this. But they do manage to dispose of all of this toxic waste. Otherwise, they would very likely have to put it in cement casks and carry it out to the ocean, and it would be very expensive. But this way, they actually sell it to the communities to put in the water supply. And it's all based on this myth that it's good for teeth. They will claim, and Jackie Spear has bought this hook, line, and sinker that'll reduce cavities by 60%. Well, this particular claim has been looked into by very, very good people, including the Rand Corporation, the Royal Academy of Dentistry in Denmark. It's been looked into by the University of Melbourne in Australia. It's been looked into by the New York State Bureau of Health Services back in 1954. It's been looked into by Dr. Gray up in Canada. It's been looked into here by Dr. Douglas from the University of Illinois. And as I mentioned, the Rand Corporation. And they have found that the early studies of 50 years ago on which this claim is based were actually so faulty that the studies should not be reviewed anymore. In all subsequent studies, this particular finding has never been validated, and it is one giant myth. And I'll tell you more about it in just another minute. Good morning again. This is Dr. Lee sitting in for Dr. McDougall. We're talking about fluoride. This happens to be a very pertinent issue regarding health, and I will, in a few moments, tell you some of the damages that fluoride does to you. It is an enzyme poison par excellence, as any biochemist knows. However, what we're really talking about right now is the myth of financial savings from fluoridation. There is this myth that it reduces cavities in children and therefore will save us money if we would only fluoridate all our water. And one would think that the people who maintain this myth, the people who bring this claim to the legislature, would be obligated to prove that such a thing would in fact occur, because there must be plenty of opportunities around the world where people have studied dental costs before and after fluoridation, been able to compare them with adequate control groups. Well, there are these dental studies, and not one of them shows that there's any saving. The Rand Corporation, in fact, in 1981, published a report, The Costs, Effects, and Benefits of Preventive Dental Care, in which they reviewed the entire literature of fluoride, and they found that the studies were so poorly done and had so many errors in them that they have no relevance to any criterion of public policy making. That's a quote from their study, and they point out the statistical errors that were made, the lack of controls, they're measuring the wrong thing, they don't follow the rate of change in the kids' teeth, and they're tremendous number of examples where they, it's called a selection bias, where they merely study the cavity rate in a number of towns and compare it with the fluoride in the water, and they find a wide variety of results, and they select out the two towns to compare that will show the point that they want to make, and they don't tell the public about the rest. But now with the Freedom of Information Act, experts have been able to obtain the original studies, and they find, for instance, that in one study that's very famous, the McClure study, he actually tested over 300 communities, compared their dental decay rates and their fluoride content, and out of that, he selected 22 in order to show his results. When all 300 are compared, it's found that there is no benefit from the fluoride. And as far as cost goes, Dr. Douglas at the University of Illinois compared 6 fluoridated communities with 6 non-fluoridated communities, and he actually received the all the economic data from all the dentists in these towns and found there was absolutely no difference in the type of care given, the nature of the care, the cost of the care. The only thing he found that the dentist incomes in the fluoridated communities were actually a bit higher than the dentist incomes in unfluoridated communities. This is the same thing that was found by the National Dental Caries Prevalence Survey in 1979-80. Same thing was found in 1986-1987 National Survey of U.S. Children, the NIDR, the National Institute of Dental Research. They publicly claimed that they found that fluoride benefited kids' teeth. But through the Freedom of Information Act, when the actual data were collected, it was found there was absolutely no connection whatsoever with the decayed missing filled teeth, DMFT. And the one study in the United States, which has gone on for a number of years, the Kingston-Newburgh study, in which they originally claimed a 60% reduction, all subsequent examinations of the kids' teeth in those two towns find that the rate of decay has been identical. It's gone down in both. So part of the myth is maintained because there is a decline of dental caries that has occurred in Western Europe, in England, and the United States and Canada over the last two or three decades, but this decline has nothing to do with fluoride. You will have dentists claiming 20 years ago he had his office full of kids with cavities in their teeth, and now he says it's quite rare. And this is perfectly true. The problem to the fluoridationists is that it's true also in the unfluoridated communities. And in fact, it's identical. So all studies, and I have lists of hundreds of them, show that there is no correlation with the status of the fluoride in the water. The correlation may come about because of general improvement of dental hygiene, general improvement in diet, and kids are brushing their teeth more, and perhaps the kids are building up an immunity to the strep mutans germ, which is the germ that sits in our teeth and makes plaque, and this germ has the ability to convert sugars into acids that dissolve teeth. Excuse me. And the kids now have antibodies against that germ and have less plaque, and it comes about from an immunity that is developing in the people. So that the fluoride is a sham. It's a mirage. It's a myth. And unfortunately, our senators and representatives, assembly people at Sacramento, even though they've received all of this information, they never get a chance to read it, apparently. I've been up and talked to some of them. They haven't read it. What they do is weigh it. They have piles and piles of material that comes into them from the Public Health Service and from the ADA, and they have all of this information that comes from the scientists who oppose it, and all they do, I think, is just to weigh it, and that's the way they vote. However, anyone who wishes to comment about this or challenge me on any of this, be welcome a call at 270-1350 or 1-800-570-TALK. And we'll be back after a short break. Good morning. This is Dr. Lee sitting in for Dr. McDougall. We have Hilda on the line from Cotati. Hilda?
Dr. Lee, I was very interested in your remarks on the fluoride at the beginning of the program. I would, I already called Thompson's office, but I want to give this information to friends and to my son, who's a dentist. Is there a summary of what you said, any place that I could get? All those studies you talked about and all that stuff.
All right. If you'd like, you could write to me at my P.O. Box number, 2068.
P.O. 68. Where?
It's in Sebastopol.
Yeah.
95473. Just put it John R. Lee, M.D., P.O. Box 2068, Sebastopol, 95473, and put a little sign, say fluoride, and my secretary will make sure that I get it. I have prepared some of, I have copies of the material that I sent to the assembly people and the senators, and it has all the references in it.
Yeah.
So if someone would want that, I could make up some copies and send it to them.
Well, I would appreciate that.
Right. I'm glad you called, because there's one other point I'd like to make. Everybody says if all these references exist and all this knowledge already is out there and it's been there for 20, how can this steamroller keep going along? And I'd just like to give you a couple of examples. Dr. Colhoun in New Zealand was the chief dental officer in New Zealand. He was asked to study the effect of fluoride on the kids in Auckland, New Zealand, and he did, and he found out that the fluoridated kids had no benefit of cavity reduction. All that was happening was that 30% of them had fluoride discolored teeth. They had fluorosis. And when he did this, he was told he could not publish this. This would be it'd be an embarrassment to the in front of the world that the fluoride wasn't working. They'd been claiming it had. But he went ahead and published it anyway, and he got fired. That was the end of his career with the National Health Service. Dr. Gray in British Columbia did the same thing. He did a study of all the children in the school districts of British Columbia and found that the fluoride in the water of 40% of them or so did nothing to protect them from cavities. And with that, he was fired. When I practiced in Marin County for years, and when our county health officer questioned Sacramento about some of the claims they were making, and I was showing her that the studies don't show that at all, she questioned that, and the next thing I knew, she took early retirement. There's the Public Health Service will tell its employees, are you a team player or not? As if the right or wrong of something scientific requires a team that you have to prove what you say. It's a crazy thing that's going on right now, and we're in the midst of this, and I think people ought to, we need your help. You just contact the your senators, either Milton Marks or Mike Thompson or both of them, and say, look, you should have a right to choose this yourself. You know that a large number of the communities that are going to be fluoridated by this mandated thing have already voted not to have fluoride. Look at the rights that are being denied here. But I hope that answers your question.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for the call. And Denise, are you there in Rohnert Park?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, I didn't catch what your name was, Doctor, I guess.
It's John Lee, L-double-E.
L-double-E?
Yeah.
Okay, because I wanted to get also a brief description, like the other lady said, too, if mm-hmm. I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
You said that was P.O. Box 2068?
2068 in Sebastopol, 95473.
95473.
And I can send to you what I sent to the senators and the assembly people.
And I put at the top your name, and right above that just put fluoride?
Right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay. And I had a question for you, too. Mm-hmm. Were you specifically directing fluoride as in our drinking water,
mm-hmm.
as in bottled water?
Mm-hmm. These were the studies I was talking about. When they used fluoride in heavier doses as a treatment for osteoporosis, that's where they created the 100% increase of hip fracture within 2 or 3 years.
Right.
When you do the studies on people drinking fluoridated water, then we're talking about lifelong fluoride exposure.
Right.
And it may take until you're 40 or 45 years old before you break your hip. And but they, even there, the hip fracture rates were 50 to 100% higher in essentially all of the 7 studies where they compared people who've been drinking fluoridated water throughout their life.
Now, is it suggested, because I've been told myself, I'm 32 years old, but
yeah.
I've been told myself that it's better to drink the bottled water versus, because I live in Rohnert Park, and that water you can taste.
Right.
In the water. It's nasty. And
well, I tell you, if you drink bottled water, realize most bottled water has been created by distilling. And so it's usually pretty devoid of minerals. So you should really seek out a good mineral supplement with plenty of magnesium in it if you're going to do that.
Okay, and what type of supplement, if I do drink the bottled water, then would be sufficient?
Well, there you can go to a health food store, to your favorite drugstore, and there are companies that sell a general mineral supplement. You should also choose a diet which is primarily plant-based, because the only source of minerals is obviously from the soil. And the only creature that can put minerals into a digestible, absorbable food for us is a plant.
Right.
There's no reason to pass the plants through a cow or a horse or a dog and then eat them.
Right.
You can get it directly from the plants yourself. So a plant-based diet will ensure the best mineral intake that you can. But just to ensure that, I also take a one-a-day kind of a mineral group, and I take 300 milligrams of magnesium.
300 milligrams?
Mm-hmm.
But is that to where an adult can do that no problem?
No problem. No problem. I can't imagine any problem with that. We're going to have to leave now. This has been a good hour, I think. It's important information, and I encourage you all to contact your senators and leave our drinking water alone.